hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Hey, fans out there, you are listening to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. I am Jacob Cazell, and with me is my very sexily voiced co-host tonight, Jeff Janey. How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing good, baby. How are you?
Somebody is working on a case of the allergies.
Yeah, this is what I sound like when I have drainage.
I know you love that word. That's why I'm using it.
It's kind of like moist. That's just an awful word, too. Just moist.
The good news is like, okay, so normally I'm a tenor, but when I'm sick, I'm getting down in that bass range, baby.
I'm going to have to do some processing just to feel like I can keep up with you. I'm going to have to EQ my voice a little bit. Yeah. So Jeff is suffering with some drainage, so bear with us. We have got a show for you today. I am not going to promise anything special because Jeff and I have both been just overwhelmed at work with a baton death march-like project. And so I don't know about you, Jeff, but I haven't had a whole heck of a lot of time to really scour the internets for all kinds of fun stories to bring to our listeners. But I feel like this is kind of a half show for them and half therapy session for us. And I don't know about you, but I always feel better after we've recorded. So we're going to muscle through this.
I can't possibly feel worse. So if it makes you feel any, I mean, there's no way that this show can bring me down any farther than I was listening to some Hurt. Nine Inch Nails. I was feeling it.
You could feel worse. You could listen to the Johnny Cash cover of Hurt. I think that makes everybody
sound
feel
more
worse.
Like the Johnny Cash version right now. I kind of feel like
you need a little more palsy in your voice.
Focus on the pain.
Well, you know, I do know one way that we could bring you down, and that is that you could find out you have some horrible disease during the course of this podcast, and we are going to talk about a new technology that may, in fact, tell Jeff he has some horrible disease.
I don't know. Does it guarantee to kill me in the next 6 to 8 months? I kind of feel like I'd get the factor of people feeling sorry for me. And
no. See, we want a horrible disease that's going to drag things out just an appreciably long time for pain and suffering, but
that's
not yeah. So you're going to get a little bit of that sympathy up front, but then after like a year and a half, people are going to be like, oh, he's not dead yet. They're just not going to care anymore. And then in about 3 years when you die, everybody will be like, I thought that guy died a while ago. You're gonna be like Art Linklater, who is now doing commercials. And when I saw the commercial, and I think he's, what is he selling? Like condos, timeshares,
because you know what a good investment is for anybody out there.
Absolutely. And when I first saw Art Linklater walk out to sell me a timeshare, I immediately turned to my girlfriend and I said, "Hey, wait, isn't he dead?" And clearly,
I
he's
you were
not.
Say you turned to your girlfriend and said, "Hey, we should buy a timeshare, baby."
That was the second thing I said.
Oh, okay.
Right along with I'm always buy insurance when the dealer shows an ace.
you always split tens to the dealer's five.
You split them faces, right? I think that's what that little cheat sheet card told me. You always stand on double eights and split the faces. Just keep split.
Splitting them up.
Okay, if you have a comment, a call, question, yeah, let's try that again because I can't talk tonight. If you have a comment, a question, a rant, or a rave, we would love if you would give us a call on our call-in line. That number, once again, for like the, 26th time, is 317-643-1212. Again, that's 317-643-1212. I messed that all up. Never mind. We'll just cut that out. I try to be clever and I can't be clever, everybody. Anyway, you can leave a message. You don't even have to talk to us. We will listen. We will respond. We will put you on air if you want. We will make you internet famous. That would be wonderful. We love when you get in touch with us. So all that fun stuff. Moving in, Jeff, you put something on here that I am interested and perplexed by on the notes. You have an entry for a music playlist experiment. Tell me what your experiment is here.
Okay, so I'm stealing this from someone else, but I thought it was such a cool idea that I want to do this.
We're original, folks.
Well, when I say I steal this, it kind of goes along with in the office. We had a conversation going on, not this past week, I think, but the week before. And it had to do with, you know, we had the whole who's better, Bon Jovi and Van Halen. And quite honestly, there's not a real answer to that question.
There is, but well, we're not going to get into that tonight.
Come on. The reality of what we came up with, there's not a real answer to those kind of questions. Because when you start boiling it down to, you know, the question that I brought up after the whole, you know, who's better, Bon Jovi or Van Halen was, who's the best guitarist? And well, there's not an answer to that. It's like saying, you know, who's the best painter? It's a very subjective opinion, and it depends on what kind of thing you're looking for. But so we had a lot of discussions around who's the best guitarist, and you can come up with, you know, 50 to 100 people that, you know, you can narrow it down to the top 50, maybe. But anyway, it kind of got me to thinking, and when I heard this person talking about it, I thought that's a great idea. So instead of saying who's the best or what's your favorite band or, you know, even necessarily what's your favorite song, although this kind of boils down to that, but not exactly. So the idea is to create a playlist that is based on our viewers, our listeners, kind of musical taste to a certain extent. And I think what we'll end up getting, at least what I hope, is a lot of very different songs in a lot of very different genres, all of which have something about them that our listeners love. And what I'm going for here is, if you had to pick one song, not necessarily what you think the best song is or what you think, you know, the most artistically challenging. No, what I want is if you had to pick one song and one song alone that you were going to tell somebody, this is what, when I think of music, this is it. This is my song. What would that be?
Okay. So is it like your desert island song, the one that you just want on repeat over and over and over forever?
Like if all you could ever have is one song, and your answer may be Bach's Sonata number 3. And if it is, I'm very sorry, because that's bad, but that's okay. No, there is no right or wrong answer. What I'm looking for really here, and what I think we will get, is a very eclectic mix of music, and all of which that will probably be fairly decent music, because again, you're going to get to pick one song. And this is what, not even necessarily your desert island song, but, you know, we know some of you, we don't know some of you. This is what you want us and or the no better than average listening audience to know. This is your song. This is the song that everyone, you've got to hear this song. So it may not even be your desert island song, but it may be that one song that, you know, no one else has heard, but man, you wish everyone had. Right?
That's interesting. So, sure. That's a hard thing to pick just one.
Okay, so I'm going to give you, I'm going to throw out there my one. So I get to pick one.
Okay.
In my one, it's not one that, I mean, at least most people maybe have heard of it, maybe not. I don't know. I'm going to pick Head Like a Hole from Nine Inch Nails. That's my one song.
Okay.
That I want on the playlist. So there you go. Number one. On the playlist, Head Like a Hole, Nine Inch Nails. I'm not expecting you to pick yours yet, Jacob, because I've had a time to think about this. I'm just saying you're going to pick one song.
Okay, so, God, this is really tough because, you know, based on your criteria, there's so many different things that you could pick. And I had one kind of in your initial criteria of somebody that, you know, you feel like someone else needs to hear. And I had an artist pop into my mind that nobody knows. And for the longest time, he was like off the grid, and there was no evidence that he ever existed. And I talked to people, you know, for years and years and years, and no one had ever heard of him. And now, thanks to the internet, his stuff is back online. And there is a guy, and gosh, I don't even know if I could pick one song of his, but if you like, I'm going to say 1960s protest folk music, which I realize is a very obscure and odd category. So,
is this really going to be a pick from you, or is this just
it I is want you guys, it okay. is it's like you need to go listen to this guy, because one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to love it, absolutely love it, or you're going to absolutely hate it, but it's an artist that is, I feel, really underappreciated and nobody knows about him. Now, I will say, fast forwarding a little bit, he's gotten older and a bit apparently anti-Semitic and maybe a tad racist. So like maybe listen to his older stuff and not his newer stuff. But his name is Biff Rose. And if I had to pick one, oh, man, that's a tough. I can't pick one. I'm going to say either.
No.
Okay, just one.
You cannot say, and that's my point. If Biff Rose doesn't have that one song, then Biff Rose is not.
He does. That's the problem. He has more than one song.
No. It has to be, like, here's the thing. Like, it has to be, for me, you know, I have a list of four or five bands that I would consider my favorite bands. And I was like, I narrowed it down to, okay, I want a song from one of these four or five bands. And I started looking. I'm like, okay, I want a Rush song.
Okay.
I couldn't pick one Rush song. I couldn't narrow it down, but when, to me, quintessential Nine Inch Nails, what defines Nine Inch Nails? If you had to say what one song is Nine Inch Nails, that's the song. That's it.
It's hard, or hurt.
It's driving, it's electronic, it's amazing. I love that song.
Okay. So it's called Two Baby.
Okay.
Biff Rose, Two Baby. You'll love him or you'll hate him, but he's someone you need to know.
So what I'm wanting you, the listeners, to do is tweet, email, share on Facebook, call our line, whatever way you want to do it. But only do it once. Don't cheat. Don't put something on Facebook and email and tweet us and have three songs, because that's going to make me feel sad inside. And
really,
you're
going to feel sad if our listeners love us so much that they overwhelm us with stuff.
Because it's cheating. Don't cheat. Be fair. I want one song from you, folks. One ping only. and send it in whichever way you want to send it in. That part I want to make as easy as possible. Whatever way you would prefer, email us, tweet us, Facebook us, call us, skywriting over Indianapolis in the afternoon next week. Whatever you want to,
carrier any of those pigeon? Options.
Yeah, carrier pigeon would be freaking cool.
Because then we'd have a delicious pigeon to eat after we got the message.
And Bob Narwhal, I'm calling you out. I want your one song. But anyway, so we'll curate this, and I believe I know Spotify has a thing where you can create and publish a playlist. I'm going to do some more looking into, and maybe if you know other services that will allow you to publish a playlist to share amongst people, hey, let us know, and we'll get that. I'll get that curated. I will take, you know, it upon myself to compile this list, and let's see if we can get a really, really cool eclectic variation of musical tastes into what is your one song. And if this goes well, like, I could see kind of expanding this out, like, what is your one I'm in a sad mood song, or what is your one, you know, I want to feel happy, or guilty pleasure. I mean, we can expand on this. I think Jacob and I both really love music, and we both love a lot of different kinds of music. So I felt like this was kind of a neat way for, you know, you introduce us to some stuff. And this time I'm looking for that one song, and you can define that however you want. You know, for me, I want it to be out of one of these three or four bands that I consider my favorite bands. And the one that stood out to me was Head Like a Hole. And Jacob apparently wanted to pick the one song from someone who's extremely racist and anti-Semitic.
No, I didn't say extremely. I said a touch. And only, I think, in his later years.
Okay, whatever. Whatever you say there,
Chief. Pre-1970s, you're fine.
That's just like saying, you know, Mel Gibson. He used to be an okay dude.
He was okay dude until he, you know, started hating the Jews.
No, I think
he started talking about hating the Jews.
There you go.
Anyway. There you go.
So
interesting idea, Jeff.
I took it from an individual on a podcast. I'm kind of expanding it out, and I think it might be interesting. And maybe it won't be, and we'll be like, boy, that Chaney, what a stupid idea he had. And that's okay, because that's kind of how my month's gone. So
I like the idea. I'm just going to put it out there on the record. I think that it's a interesting idea, and I hope that our listeners participate and give us some interesting things, because otherwise I got a whole bunch of just oddball songs that I can recommend. I'm going to be the one out there just posting it everywhere, and Jeff is going to be like,
Freebird, woo!
Oh, sorry. I do like Freebird, you know, I got to admit. Okay, so I have I don't know if it's a funny little story. It's a putting me to shame little story.
Then, in my opinion, it is both necessary and funny.
So you, if you are a devoted listener, you may remember some weeks back, one of the things that I talked about in What I Love, I think it was What I Love. Anyway, I talked about it on the show, is a little game called 1010. And I think it's available for Android and iOS. And I think maybe even Microsoft Windows Phone.
No. Make my memory that's a game about shooting a dog that in the whole family feels sad, right?
No, that's no. That's actually not Tintin. That would be Old Yeller. Tintin has something to do with pastel colored line art or something like that. No, sorry, if you don't recall what it is, Tintin is a diabolically simple game that will drive you insane. And it's you get a grid, a 10 by 10 grid, and you get three blocks at the bottom that you have to place on said grid. When you fill a line across side to side or top to bottom, that line disappears. And the object of the game is just to play until you're insane. There is no end in sight. And, so my girlfriend was the one who turned me on to it, and I played, and like immediately I got to a high score, which I'm ashamed to admit. And then I got stuck at that high score. I mean, for weeks and weeks and weeks, and never was able to beat it. And my girlfriend is just like a natural at this game. And so I guess I have to say it to make the story make any sense. So my high score was like 3,700. I think you even played it, Jeff, and not a whole lot better than that. Some other people I know that I tuned into it.
And then I'll go look and see what my high score is.
All right.
And admit it.
I tuned some other people I know into the game. And again, they got hooked on it because it's an addictive little game. And they didn't ever have, great scores or anything like this. So as I
4,789.
Ooh, 47. I think just today I beat my high score, and I think I may have beaten that, but if I did, it is a squeaker.
I haven't played it in quite some time.
I am ashamed to admit I play it at least 10 to 15 minutes every day, and no, my high score is now 4,026. I'm pathetic at this game. Anyway, so as I mentioned at the top of the show, this Baton Death March project that we're on. So just last week, one of the things that we had to do was, so what this project is, and it's a little technical, so I'll talk about it for you geeks that are interested. We have a product that runs on a database platform that is SQL Server, and our management team has said, hey, we have done an evaluation, and it looks like it makes more sense to have this product running on Oracle. So we are switching databases sort of on the fly, which is fun because there's all kinds of data type issues and custom code and all that fun stuff. So they're not small databases. I mean, they're, one of them is multiple terabytes. And the other one, I think, is just over a terabyte. So it's, a lot of work. And we just recently had to do a test export import so we could get some timings and figure out, can we even do this conversion over the window that we're going to be, given to do it. And so I had to cloister myself in my home office and basically work all night to do this export and import to get the timings. And so my lovely girlfriend sat on the couch and, no fooling, for three solid hours played a game of 1010. And as she was staggering to bed, bleary-eyed, she stopped by the office and said, hey, I managed to get a new high score on that game 1010. I'm like, oh, yeah. And, her high scores were like, 15,000, 16,000. She was always way above me in that respect. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. What's your new high score? And it was like 30-some thousand. And I can't even get anywhere close to that. And so she was having a problem. Apparently there was a bug in the last version of 1010, and it was caching ads on the phone. So her phone was like running really slow, and 1010 was running really laggy. And she looked in the little usage thing, and it was using almost 2 gigabytes of space. So, that's not good. So she deleted it off and lost her high score and had to put it back on. So she's had it back on her phone now for like literally 24 hours. And she's already back up to like 20 some thousand on her score. And it just puts me to shame because I can't get anywhere close. I have been playing this stupid game for weeks and weeks and weeks every single day, and I can't get close to it. So that, I don't know. I thought it was funny. That's my little 1010 story.
Well, what drives me crazy about the game is that I'm so entrenched in the world of Tetris that I play the game incorrectly, because I don't really think that they give you, at least if they do give you, much of a bonus for having multiple lines.
No, they don't.
And see, I get myself in trouble.
Were you trying to clear a huge thing, right?
Because I'm trying to play it like Tetris, where I need to clear 20 rows at the same time.
No, it doesn't make
impossible because there's only 10. But
it doesn't make any difference at all.
And it makes no difference whatsoever, which means I can't get past playing it like it's Tetris. It's not Tetris, but So here's my geek cred. You know, when I was back in the day and I had Nintendo Power magazine, and I always wanted to be a Nintendo Power. Why can't I have a high score? So I actually had a published high score of Tetris.
Get out.
Yeah, I did.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Because I was really good at Tetris. Whether or not it's truly a testament of intelligence, I don't know. A lot of people put a lot of stock value in spatial relations. I'm really good at spatial relations and therefore really good at Tetris. But yeah, not I played this game incorrectly. And if I could ever get past that, I could probably do significantly better. But I always tend to get myself where, like, if I just got, you know, this one piece, I could clear. I actually had it one time where I was going to be able to clear, I think the biggest piece that they make is a 3x3. Yeah.
Yeah. The original Game Boy.
So in 1010, the biggest piece that you can kind of get is a 3x3 square.
Right.
And I had it set up where if I could throw a 3x3 square in this one slot, I would literally clear six rows because I'd clear three one way and three the other. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. And it was going to give me absolutely nothing for doing it.
No,
and
but
then I killed myself.
Yeah, so, yeah. I do the same thing. And yeah, it's so no, I am not a talent at the game. I play it wrong. And a lot of my games end at like 200 or 300 because I'm doing that and I stack it up. And then I realize I'm out of places to play. But anyway, it's a fun game. Go download it if you haven't checked it out. You will hate me and thank me at the same time for it. Okay, so I saw this today, and I thought this was really interesting. There is a Democratic candidate for the 2016 bid who is named Lincoln, I believe Chaffee is how they pronounce their last name, who has come out and said, let's be bold. Let's join the rest of the world and go metric. And to that, I say, huzzah. It is time that the United States looks again to the metric system and embraces its powers of 10 brethren. And he has absolutely no shot. But I think it's interesting that all of a sudden, to differentiate themselves, there is a candidate out there running and talking about metric.
Metric. Sure. I can't. Honestly, dude, I cannot say I'm excited. Okay, so here's my deal on metric.
Really?
No, I'm really not. Honestly, I've given up. I've given up hope on it because here's the thing. Okay, so metric makes a crap ton of megaton of sense for every measurement except for temperature. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. There is no reason to go to Celsius.
That's true.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Let's make less precise scale. No, that's retarded. So Celsius can die in a fire as far as I'm concerned. Now, everything else that pretty much makes sense, right?
It does.
It's a more precise measurement. But it's never going to happen in the United States because America.
Well, you know, but they made a huge push in the 1970s and almost got it done. And there are places where there are still metric road signs up.
So why did that happen? Why was there a push?
Because Jimmy Carter.
And why Jimmy Carter?
Because he was an educated president.
Because he was a scientist. And you know what scientists we're ever going to have as a president ever again? None. None the more scientists.
Why are you trampling all over my excitement about this? There are only two other countries.
I meant, Jacob, is this is a great idea, Jacob. Mm.
There are only two other countries that don't use the metric system. And those two countries are Libya and Myanmar. So we're in good company with those terrorist housing and harboring countries in our feet and miles and rods and hogheads. And that's just terrible.
That's not really a fair assessment. I mean, come on.
Okay. Do you think that the average person, man on the street, can tell you how long a kilometer is?
No, absolutely not. No, not even close.
So how is it not fair? I mean, I don't understand why we haven't come back to it. I hope that Mr. Chaffee has nothing but good luck convincing the rest of the world we need to change.
To be fair about it, I don't think anyone could tell you how far a mile is either. How many feet are there in a mile? Like if you ask,
I know the answer to that.
I know you know the answer to that, and I know that I know the answer to that. But that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you ask the average person on the street, how many feet in a mile? They're going to be like, a mile is the
I bet people have a better idea. They may not be able to tell you to the foot, But I bet people have a rough idea.
No.
No,
Jacob.
I got to stop defending the masses.
I know we're not doing a video podcast, but you can see me.
I can see you.
No. No. And here's the thing, folks. You're probably listening to us going, Chaney, you're crazy. We know how many feet there are in a mile. And you know what, listeners? I do not doubt that, because we have intelligent listeners. Because if you're listening to this show, you probably have at least some cursory interest in technology and are somewhat educated. And yes, you probably know how many feet there are in a mile. You are not the kind of people I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is drive to your nearest Walmart. And the next 100 people that walk into that Walmart, ask them how many feet there are in a mile. And they are going to look at you like you are stupid. And they are going to have no idea.
Yeah, but do you know how many rods are in a hogshead? That is probably true. They probably are.
And to get people to change, I mean, if you were being fair about it, it really wouldn't matter to change, because, again, I argue that most people don't know how far a mile is anyway, so what difference does it make if they use a mile or a kilometer?
Well, none. They none get there over. Faster if they use a kilometer, because it's shorter.
It would reduce speeds if you just said, well, the speed limit is still 65.
No, that people you have. No, that would suck. We have to make it like 98. Think how excited people would get when they realize they can go faster.
Side, can we drive on the left side of the road?
I think it only makes
Cheerio
sense.
And watch the telly.
Okay. You're just patronizing me now. Okay. Fine. We'll put a pin in the metric system. It's never going to happen. I get that. But while I was reading about this story, I came across something which I had never heard of. Have you ever heard of the chicken tax?
No,
you
I haven't.
Haven't. Help because more, please. I have never heard please. Of it. Okay. So
I need me some chicken.
Yeah. I found a link to an article on a thing called the chicken tax, which is the second WTF America. The first is, how come we don't have metric? So there was a tax imposed in 1963 by Lyndon Johnson, and it was a 25% tariff on potato starch, dextrin, brandy, and light trucks. And it was put there primarily against France and West Germany. It was put there in response to tariffs placed by France and West Germany on our exportations of chickens. So, and I've never heard this before. The period from 1961 to 1964 is actually a heightened tension during the Cold War, and it was called the Chicken War. So, what the even crazier thing is, all of the tariffs have been lifted except for the tariff on light trucks. It is still in place today, ostensibly to protect the domestic automakers from foreign competition. But as an unintended consequence, several importers of light trucks have to circumvent the tariff with loopholes. So Ford, who is somebody that was supposed to benefit from the tax, imports a light truck called the Transit Connect. And it is put together in Turkey as a passenger vehicle, and they bring them over to the States, and they immediately strip out all of the pieces that make it a passenger vehicle in a warehouse outside of Baltimore and convert it back into a light truck. And we still have that in place today.
If anybody's watched American Pickers, you've seen one of those vehicles.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's a Transit. And it is brought in as a passenger vehicle and converted back into a light truck to avoid the chicken tax. So there you go. Your politicians working for you, a 48-some-odd-year-old tariff war against West Germany and France, and we still have it on the books. So there you go.
That's great, actually.
Yeah, I never heard of that one. It kind of made me chuckle a little bit. So, you know, who knows?
How many liters of chicken are we talking?
Well, it would be cubic centimeters, right? How many cc's?
Can I point out that I do not want to keep gas prices the same if we move to metric?
Well, that's fair. But, okay, again, think how happy the less educated metric illiterate among us would be.
Did you see my gasoline? It's down to $2.
Well, what would it be? It would literally be like 50 cents a liter, right? Thereabouts.
Well, I mean, if you kept the price the same, but well, I kind of feel like that would be the perfect opportunity for.
But we would also convert all of our money to metric too, right?
All that metric money.
All the metric money. And we'd also have.
You mean instead of going to like 70 cents, 75 cents, 80 cents, and then.
It's all powers of 10.
Really?
Sure.
Okay.
Why not? Isn't it's just metric? All rounded.
Isn't that metric already?
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry.
How about we go to metric time and a metric calendar?
Can we go back to bits? Can that be a thing? Can we have a bit?
Ones and zeros, that's it? Or do you mean 12 and a half cents?
Like, I mean 12 and a half cents. Like, I want a shave and a haircut, 2 bits.
I feel like you're not going to find a shave and a haircut anywhere for 2 bits. It might be about like 60 bits.
What if we brought bit back and made it $12.50?
Oh, I like the way you think.
So we got a bit. And so a shave and a haircut, a bit. And you'd be like, woohoo, a bit.
Okay, but...
until you realized it was $12.50.
Here's my question. Can you get a haircut for $12.50?
Actually, the little local barber, I could probably get a shave and a haircut for 2 bits if it was $12.50.
Because really?
I think it's $25 for a haircut and a straight razor shave.
Oh, I do like the straight razor shave.
I do too.
Makes you feel all fancy, like you're a gentleman from the old west.
Makes you feel like you're all old timey.
Yeah, it does. And maybe a splash of bay rum.
Yeah.
Okay. We're way, way off track.
You know, we've had a week. We mentioned that, yeah, right?
It has indeed been
that was the thing,
week.
Right?
Yes, it has. You've got a thing on here I don't know nothing about. I want to talk about hydrogels, and is that going to make my hair look fabulous and give it body?
So, yeah, this I thought was kind of interesting and fairly exciting. So, caveat being that all of this work is being done outside the United States because Merck doesn't think that we should ever use stem cells.
Boo. Yeah, I want more stem cells. I want a stem cell ham sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. So, basically, what hydrogels is... I think most people have heard stem cell research and it's groundbreaking and it's going to change the world. And to a certain extent, that's all true. A problem that they've basically had, though, is how do you use those stem cells to help effectively heal issues? And up to this point,
like daddy issues?
We all, yeah, that's what I meant by issues, Jacob. So let me give you an example.
Okay.
Let's say that a person is blind. So just injecting stem cells into a person isn't going to fix that blindness.
Okay.
You need to be able to focus those stem cells. And so what this hydrogel basically does, it's a way to focus the therapy of stem cell research to a very specific portion that you need to help with. The initial studies have been in rats, of course, because mm-hmm. No one cares if you kill a bunch of rats, or most people, I guess I should say, don't care if you kill a bunch of rats because they're rats.
Michael Jackson cares.
Well, maybe. I don't think Michael Jackson does anything, but okay. So in rats, they're using it to apparently they probably induce strokes in rats, which even I'm kind of feeling a little bad about that at this point, but they then use these hydrogels to focus healing of the brain in a very specific area that was affected by the stroke.
Okay.
And they can use this hydrogel. It basically allows the placement of those stem cells for a specific area for those stem cells to thrive in and help rebuild the damaged tissue. And so it's non-reactive. Your body isn't going to reject it, which is very important.
Okay.
And then the stem cells kind of do their little handy dandy work. And they're saying the one that I thought was kind of interesting, they've been using this in blind rats and using the hydrogel in the, on the retina actually. And they've seen a responsiveness of over 15% in purely blind rats to having 15% vision, which, 15% vision would still suck, but it would be amazing compared to no vision at all.
That is true.
So anyway, it's kind of interesting in that, it's just a way that they're able to find it at this point. They're moving towards more very specific therapy. And stem cell therapy is, in my opinion, a big deal and something that, man, I really wish that the United States could wake up and let our smart. I mean, I don't have any doubt that there are a lot of smart people in Canada, but if you just played the statistics game, they don't have as many people in Canada as they have in the United States. So therefore, ipso facto, they have less intelligent people than we do.
Yeah, that's a dangerous game to play, though, because by that same logic, China should be just popping out people who are all stem cell mutant freaks of nature.
Well, I'm just pointing out, I think that a lot of medical breakthroughs happen in Europe and in America. And right now, America's not doing any research in this area because...
That is true. I don't know what the rules are now. I know that under Bush's presidency, there was a cut in federal funding for any stem cell research. But I don't honestly know if Obama has... continued that or reversed it or what the current state of stem cell research is.
I don't think that they're allowed to do much of anything at universities, to be honest with you.
Well, that's interesting.
Based on the article, like they were like, people from Harvard went to the University of Toronto to help out in this study because they can't do their study at Harvard, which I guess, you know, all things being equal, I wouldn't mind going to Toronto. So,
well, that's true. And that, right? Kind of sad for America. I mean, what happened to being the, you know, the leader in innovation and that stuff.
So, yeah, I don't know a ton about it because, well, medical science is way, way outside anything that I have any actual knowledge about. But a pretty, pretty interesting little article. It wasn't a huge article. It got very technical very quick. And then I was
tuned right out, did you?
I was trying to figure out how many feet there were in a mile at that point. It was just, it was beyond me. I admit that it meant nothing to me.
But how many millimeters in a mile?
I got something I wanted to bring up. And,
okay.
And this is a totally different topic, not on our topic list, but I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Sure.
So I have this idea, and I doubt it will happen, but boy, I sure hope it does. What would you think if I told you, hey, wonder what would happen? I wonder if Obama will pardon Snowden in his last... days in office.
There's a snowball's chance.
Well, I think that they're probably, I think that's probably true. There probably is a snowball's chance, but I got to say, you know, I'm sure that President Obama listens to our podcast on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
So when you hear this, Mr. Obama,
Barry to us,
I didn't want to let the cat out of the bag.
Hey, if you're going to name drop, do it big.
So if, you know, if someone at the White House is listening to this, pull him to the side and tell him to pardon this dude. Because seriously, like, if you think about where we were 3 years ago, and we've really got to, at this point, understand that this man did the American public a great service. And there's no reason that he shouldn't be pardoned and brought back. I mean, what the government was doing was wrong. And I think that, you know, we have seen some changes. And all those changes have been because of him. If it were not for him, the Patriot Act would have passed. We would know nothing about all this stuff that's going on. And where would we be? I mean, he has changed America for the better. He has brought us back to some of the rights and privileges that we all deserve and should have. And if anyone in the world deserves a pardon so that he can come back, in my opinion, that's who it should be.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of that. I think that there's a snowball's chance that that will happen.
You say that, but I mean, I think Obama was at least somewhat part of the changes that we've seen in the last few years. And I know it would be extremely unpopular politically, but what does he have? I mean, he has nothing to lose at this point.
Okay, but what has he done that would be nothing to lose that's politically unpopular that's surprised you so far?
Okay, yeah, that's a fair point.
I mean, you know, I think that people had a lot of hopes that he would be the different hope and change guy. But I think that the problem is that, you know, you can't be that renegade because the system is not set up to let you be that renegade. It grinds you down and stops that from happening. And, you know, he may feel exactly the same way. He might be listening right now saying, that Jeff, he's got a good point. Obama, ladies and gentlemen, just like he's in the room. And but at the same time, he probably realistically can't do anything about it. And I mean, you know, if you want the evidence of how, I mean, you think that your job is tough right now, look at a picture of the president, his day of inauguration, and look at a picture of the president, the last day in office. And I don't care who it is, or if you like that president or don't like that president, they all look like they've just been through hell and back. I mean, that 4 or 8 years ages them three times as much as that time should. And I feel like every president is hamstrung in a lot of ways, and they still get the flack from the 50% of people who hate everything they stand for, and it's all their fault. And really, it probably a lot of it isn't their fault. Yeah. But, you know, just like the president gets the credit when the economy's great, whether he did it or not, and the president gets the blame when the economy is bad, it's just that's the way it is. I think it would be amazing if he did, but I just don't see it happening.
There were two things in this in my life as an adult that I wish presidents would have done. And this is going to go down on that list. If he doesn't do it, I'm always going to think back and say Obama should have X, and that X is going to be he should have pardoned Snowden. My other one is that when they captured bin Laden, they should have taken his head out of a paper bag on air and plopped it on the Oval Office desk and said, boom, we got him.
But then they would have turned him into a martyr.
I know.
I mean, I get why they
I'm joking, can't. By the way. I don't really think they should have done that. But anyway, hey, let's talk about I want to hear what you're telling me about all these how sick I've been crap that you were talking about earlier. So, okay. So lay it on me, man. So give me some knowledge.
All right. There's two stories that kind of go hand in hand. And the first one I saw today, which is, I'm going to say it's 50% applicable because it is a test that you can take. If you were between the ages of 40 and 70, you know, asterisk, and you live in the United Kingdom. And what it is a risk calculator that will predict your chances of dying in the next 5 years. So really smart people have done some crazy data mining, and it's really interesting what data mining will let you do. And they have analyzed 655 key measurements of health and lifestyle factors in about 500,000 people in the UK Biobank from between the ages of 40 and 70, and have created a statistical survival model that you can answer just a few questions, and it will give you what is called your, I believe it's pronounced the UBLE age, which is the UK Longevity Explorer. And it will also tell you what your odds of dying are. And now, since I am not 40 yet, I apparently have a 0% chance of dying.
You are squeaking right in there, Chief.
I am, but I don't fall within the criteria. I thought it would be fun to run through the questions with you, Jeff, and find out exactly you know, how you're going to die.
Do we have to do them together? Because I already did this.
I think it would be fun to expose it for our readers, listeners.
Well, I think there's some questions in there that I don't necessarily.
Okay,
I'm a pretty open guy, Jacob.
That's fine.
There are probably some questions in there, having gone through it, that I don't necessarily want out.
Okay, that's fine.
The world of the public. So let me. Can I just?
Are you
going
to die? I want to know.
So the answer is yes, I'm going to die. However, statistically speaking, there's only a 0.7% chance of that happening in the next 5 years.
Oh well, that's pretty good.
I thought it wasn't bad at all, but I'm obviously a lot closer to that 40 mark than I am the 70 mark, which I feel like is probably a bigger part of that statistic than anything else. But I think that, you know, you said if you live in the UK, I think, but most of those questions would hold true here. There were some weird questions about, you know, are you on certain kind of what I assume are welfare type programs.
Yeah, that's true.
I just kind of in my mind said, oh, that means are you on Medicaid or Medicare or welfare? In my mind, and that's kind of how I use those to answer them. But I think it's probably a pretty fair assessment.
Yeah.
And the good news is there's probably a 99% chance that 5 years from now, I will be alive to do this show. Whether or not this show will exist in 5 years, that's a totally separate question. And whether or not you'll be talking to me still in 5 years, yet again, a different question.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, good to know that you are probably not going to die. I think since it is only a 0.7% chance, that really the prudent thing to do would be to cancel your life insurance and just take that money and use it to buy fun stuff. And then here in 5 years, when your chances go back up again, maybe redo the test, find out, you know, maybe if you're still under that 1% mark, you know, keep the life insurance canceled. And if you pop up,
I will put this out there. I was surprised that it was 0.7. I expected it to be significantly higher, because some of those questions that I didn't want to put out there, I will tell you, puts me, statistically speaking, at least from a premium on what I pay for health insurance or for life insurance, in a not so good place.
Yeah.
my life insurance is not cheap, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So,
well, again, yeah. So I think you just cancel it and you live that devil may care.
I take that money and I put it on black.
Ooh, I like the way you think.
I let it ride.
No. You put it on black. You don't let it ride.
No, you let it ride.
Jay. No, you chase the color. So you put it on black, you put it on black, you put it on black, and then you go to red. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, the statistics, other,
that's how they work.
Statistics, Jay. That's right.
Because it's been four blacks in a row. It couldn't buy, there's no chance it could be black again next time, or it could be.
Slightly less than 50% chance, right? I suppose it depends on whether there's a single zero or a double zero.
Every time. That's what I'm trying to say, baby.
Okay, so the other thing I thought was interesting is there's a new story that came out this week. And actually, this is what I was alluding to at the top of the hour.
The one that I think is really cool.
Which, if it's true, is amazing. But researchers have created a blood test, a new blood test, that apparently can detect every type of virus you've ever had in your entire life. And the really amazing thing is they say that it'll only cost about $25 to administer, which means that by the time it gets to the hospital near you, it will only cost about $2,500 to administer. right now, it can detect over 1,000 strains of about 206 viruses. And I guess the way it works is that when your body is infected by a virus and it successfully defeats it, it produces the antibodies for a good long time, and they stick to your red blood cells and your hemoglobin, and this new test called a VerScan can detect those. And I guess that the current treatment, if you are presenting with some obviously viral symptoms at a hospital, they have to do a best guess. We think that this is what is, what is ailing you, and then they have to specifically test for that. And if they find it, then great. But if they don't, then they have to go back and go, it wasn't that. But based on all of the symptoms and knowing it wasn't this one thing we thought it was, it's this other thing we think it is, we're going to test for this other thing. And they just keep doing that. And it's an iterative process until they figure it out or your insurance runs out and they just shuffle you out into the street to die because America. But now they can just take a drop of blood and run it through and go, here are all of the things that you've ever had. And that is just absolutely magical as far as I'm concerned. The other thing I think is really interesting, and admittedly, it's only coming from a sample of 569 people, but they had found, the researchers had found, that on average, those people had a 10 virus average viral load. And, I got to thinking about that, and I'm like, that doesn't really seem like very much at all. So I don't know if that's, like one particular strain of, I don't know, like norovirus that keeps coming back over and over and over again. Cause I feel like I've gotten sick with like a virus infection thing way more than 10 times in my life, but maybe it's not 10 different viruses. Maybe it's one virus over and over again. And I've, been clear of hepatitis and HIV and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, it's,
I think that the virus, while it stays in your bloodstream for a while, that footprint, but I don't think it's forever.
It doesn't say, and I'm not enough of a biologist to know the answer to that, but the article I read said that those antibodies can stay around for years. So, okay. I mean, potentially,
but it probably is that it's one of 10 viruses over and over again, I guess. I assume that's probably what it is, right?
Well, and they may not make
a distinction. Viruses sometimes get a bad rap because a lot of us get food poisoning or, pick up a little bacteria that we shouldn't have, yeah, and we blame it on viruses.
Right. But, like the
common cold. And that virus really never did anything to us, but we're blaming it.
Right. That's just blame the virus. He's always the fall guy. So that's what I was alluding to. We might find out, Jeff, that you have like super AIDS or something like that. We just need a drop of your blood.
Well, I can make the drop of my blood happen. So if you're willing to pay the $2,500 that it will cost, I am up for that. I kind of feel like I'm probably pretty good in the, I think in the virus category, like viruses look at me and say, yeah, he's a little chunky, a little chunky. I'm not interested.
I feel like a virus would look at you and go, we could infect him a good long time. I feel like I'm right there in that same boat with you.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, it is. I mean, just it almost sounds like the article to me almost sounds like, you know, something out of Star Trek where you just kind of go and then you've got a pretty much a complete list of all of the viruses that you've had that at least your body's still making antibodies for, which,
yeah, that,
I mean, that's cool. Some of them last a long time. Like they say, you know, like chicken pox and measles. Once you have the antibodies for those, you never get them, right?
No.
I don't know.
If you had enough of them to create appropriate antibodies that will last, I think that boils down to.
Well, I had the chickenpox pretty fierce when I was like in about the fourth or fifth grade, yeah, and I've never had it since.
That is true. I just know, like, if you only had a mild case of the chickenpox, that sometimes that can come back to haunt you.
Oh no, everything was pocked. It was bad. My sister actually still has scars from it.
Yeah,
we had the super pox.
I got the chickenpox, but I had a very mild case, and they always warned me, you know, if you ever get this as an adult, you are
you're in trouble.
Just all the dead. So,
well, I don't think it's all the dead, but I think it's much, much worse to get chickenpox as an adult.
No, I'm just going to jump off a building.
Oh, okay. Well, that does seem to be the only prudent thing. Okay, I got one more little thing I just wanted to throw out there because, you know,
I'm FCC. Not feeling good. I'm getting tired. I'm just saying.
All right. This is going to be quick.
I had a good show last week. This week, I'm not. I admit that, folks. I'm accepting. I accept that, Jacob.
All right. Well, so what this is the FCC just this week voted to allow cable companies to basically charge whatever the heck they want, overriding laws that were in place that would prevent them from raising rates, especially from broadcast TV and local channels. Now, apparently the FCC has been guilty in granting waivers in the past, apparently 220 out of 224 times requested in the last year. But now in a secret 5-4 vote where they have not even announced who voted for what, they have just said, let's throw that out right out the window and let these cable companies do whatever they want. And darn it, Tom Wheeler, I thought that you were doing some of the right things when the public had spoken about net neutrality, and here you go and do something like this.
So
when evidently, you never learn.
Evidently, Tom Wheeler's belly was just full from the babies, and now they're not. So his dingo ways are coming back.
Yes.
Okay, so here's my take on this, and it probably won't be what you're necessarily thinking. Here's my call.
All right.
I think that we should allow cable companies to charge whatever they want for local channels.
Fair enough.
But with that, I think that we should take all of the over-the-air bandwidth that we have granted those local channels and just take them away. Take it away and use it for wireless internet for the masses.
So that means no broadcast television locally?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
That's what about the people who are cord cutters?
Well, okay, but if you take away broadcast television, then those people are going to – those companies, ABC, CBS, NBC, CW, Fox, they're going to find ways to get in your ear holes and eye holes, and that's probably going to push them towards going to a service, either cable and or, you know, Apple, whoever, to get that stuff in there.
It's not the national affiliates that I worry about. It's, you know, getting the local, you know, Channel 59 weather and, you know, Channel 8,
that's Fox.
You know, Eyewitness News. Right. But you're talking about taking away the broadcast, the local broadcast, and that's those guys. How are they going to put the broadcast for, you know, affiliates in every market that they're in on the internet? That's a huge infrastructure requirement on the networks' part.
Well, the only time I ever get weather and or news from the local affiliate is on my phone from their app.
Yeah, but so I still feel like you're in the minority.
Well, I am, but how do you force change? I mean, I think that the idea of broadcast television, I mean, we give them that bandwidth for free. Let me rephrase that. We should start charging. If they're going to keep their broadcasting, you know, airwaves. The government should start charging for that.
Yeah, okay, maybe.
Because they, in my opinion, hold on, excuse me.
Well, I think the government does charge the networks. I mean, they pay for the right to have that spectrum and that frequency.
Not as much as they should.
Well,
because maybe. The idea is they're providing a public service.
I'll grant you that's not probably so much these days.
And my argument is they're really not anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am not.
Yeah. I think this still the culprit is the cable companies. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, a deregulation and forcing them to open their networks is the answer.
Thing, like, yeah, I see what you're saying, but by saying that there's a minimum that you can charge people to bring them, you know, local broadcast affiliates, that's not really necessarily fair, in my opinion, either to the cable companies. I'm not saying that, oh, woe's me, the cable companies, but there is an overlay, especially if you're wanting local, if you're wanting cable companies to increase infrastructure and build out optical, fiber and bring us more bandwidth and more things. I mean, there is a cost associated with them giving you that signal over their wire. Granted, they're not necessarily paying for the content, but there's still infrastructure costs that are associated with bringing you those shows. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not saying they should be able to, I guess they shouldn't be able to charge whatever they want to a certain extent. But my answer for that is rather than saying they can charge whatever they want, I think that's fine. But you need to get rid of the monopolistic nature of the cable companies. So, yes, charge whatever you want for ABC and CBS and Fox to Jacob. Do that, but Jacob can also pick Cox or Bright House, or I mean, they need to get away from that portion of it.
Yeah, that's the thing that I don't see any change in sight. I mean, that is the cable companies will go down with their last dying breath to prevent that from happening, because I mean that kills them. If now I have the choice of I can pick Comcast or I can pick Charter or I can pick Cox or I can pick Bright House, and they're all required, or I can pick Joe Bob's programming, because to do what you just said is technically feasible, but it requires the cable companies to open their lines just like the phone companies had to do back in the 90s. Then anybody can become a content carrier, and just like we had the boom in the 90s of the internet provider, we would see that again, and inevitably there would be consolidation. It would be a boon for the little guy for a few years, and then the big companies would come together and it'd buy everybody up, and it would be back to a handful. But if you had like three or four real choices, even if they were big companies, they can't do too many shenanigans, because they know that if they get too out of line, you've got a competitor who's always willing to take those customers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting story, and darn the FCC, just when I thought maybe they were a political group that was going to, prove that they were the exception. Nope. Just when I thought that I was going to get out, they pulled me back in with their shenanigans.
Jacob.
Jeff.
So I have these documents that we share, ladies and gentlemen. We call them show notes. I'm not sure there's really many notes going on in there, but in general, we put in them things like what we love, and Jacob has not done that. So I'm going to have to wait on the edge of my seat for him to tell me right now what he loves.
Oh man. Okay. You know what? And this is my fault. I come to the recording today woefully unprepared. I admit I have not paid attention to the news much this last week, and I did not think up something that I love. And I really feel like the kid who is getting called out by the teacher, who doesn't have his homework ready, who didn't study, and who just
so you love took a big old
turd on his test. No, typical. I do typical. Love something, because I just noticed, actually, as you were talking about the cable companies and open everything up, my brain was just like a half a second ahead, and I went, oh crap, I didn't put anything down. What do I love? What do I love? What do I love? And I honestly didn't really hear much of what you said at all, as I was trying to process something on the fly.
If you pull that doll off that shelf, I swear I'm going to hit you. I'm going to reach across the webs of Enter.
You call it a doll. What it is a collectible action figure. It is not a doll.
help, help. He puts me in his bed.
Okay. For the record, everybody, it is Walter White for Breaking Bad. It is an awesome collectible, not a doll. But no, what I love, here's the thing. If you wear glasses, this is going to sound like a commercial. I just realized that as soon as I opened my mouth. If you wear glasses like I do, then I have a recommendation for you. So I am blind as a bat, and that's really probably not fair to bats because they actually have all kinds of amazing talents that I don't have, like, you know, echolocation, and they can eat their weight in bugs, and I can only eat half my weight in bugs. I'm working my way up to it. Glasses are freaking expensive, and I have a gnarly prescription that's pretty stout, and so I bought a pair of glasses, and gosh, it's been like 5 years ago, and I went to the ophthalmologist and all that, and I wanted a light, fancy pair of glasses, and I had some money left over in my flex spending account, and I ended up walking out with like a $600 pair of glasses, which that is just ridiculous if you ask me. So my sister actually turned me on to this place, and it is called Zenni Optical, and their web address I think is just Zenni, Z-E-N-N-I optical.com, and they have all kinds of glasses frames, like starting at like maybe $6, and then they go up from there. And so I had ordered a pair of glasses for them several months ago, and have had great luck with them. They fit great. They look great, in my opinion. I think other people might beg to differ that there's really nothing I can do that makes me look great. But they've just been really good glasses all around. I think I paid $50 for them, shipped to me. You know, they're high index lenses and all that good stuff. So a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know what? I hate the fact that unless I wear contacts, and I don't wear contacts very often, when I go out on a nice sunny day, my eyes hurt because I don't have sunglasses, and I am not going to get a big pair of the wraparound old lady blue blocker sunglasses and wear them over my glasses. I refuse. I am not going to do that. And I thought, hey, why don't I go on to Zenni Optical? And I bet I could make a pair of sunglasses. And I did. And I treated myself. And I had a pair of sunglasses made, and I've had them for a couple of weeks now. And I happened to be thinking about it today as I was driving home from work, because it was a beautiful sunny day and I had my sunglasses on, and by golly, they work great. And it was a nice prescription pair of sunglasses. And I think I'm into them for like just under $60, which you cannot beat with a stick. I don't care if you go to Walmart Ophthalmology, they can't do you better than that. So if you are a glasses wearer and you don't know about it, I highly suggest you check out ZenniOptical.com. And if it's the first time that you have ever looked at an online glasses provider, here's a pro tip. Your doctor, by law, has to give you your prescription, and they also have to give you a measurement that is called your PD measurement, and it is your pupil distance. And what it is it's the distance between your two pupils and a center line on your face. Now, your doctor may give it to you as one number, or they may give it to you as two numbers, but you need all that to order the glasses, and they have to give it to you. So if you're in the market for glasses or just want an inexpensive pair that you can throw around or have a backup, call your doctor up, get your prescription, go over to Zenni. They are a fantastic company. I highly recommend them. So that is what I love right now. How about you, Jeff?
I do want to point out that that was not an advertisement. We are not receiving.
No, we are not. In fact, Zenni, if you would like to send me a couple of pairs of glasses, my prescription is on file, and I think I have favorited a couple of frames. So, you know, feel free. I'm just saying.
So what I love, you know, I usually talk about tech things, and I'm going to talk about a very, very non-technical thing. And that is a book series, and it's called, I don't know what it's officially called. I call it the Aubrey Matcherin series. It's basically, if you saw the movie Master and Commander, that was out about, I don't know, probably, gosh, what, 10 or 15 years ago now?
God, has it been that long?
Yeah,
but it probably has, hasn't it?
But anyway, it takes place in the late 17, early 1800s on a, it follows the life basically of a British master and commander, and that is different than a captain. They call him a captain early on, but he's really not. He's a master and commander. It follows him and his friend, who is a surgeon / doctor, and spy. And it is one of my favorite series of books. And I have to tell you that it is not fast paced. I would downright call it almost boring to a certain extent. That being said, so it's not, you know, it's not Harry Potter where all these exciting, fun things are happening, or, you know, pick insert book series here, Jack Reacher, where he's, you know, killing people every 5 minutes, whatever. It's not anything like that. It is very slow paced, but the character development I find just fascinating because it's 19 books and you really get to know these two characters very, very well. And again, it is not fast paced. And as I was thinking about how I wanted to describe this to people, something came to mind. This series is basically Entourage set in the early 1800s. because for all intents and purposes, it's just about these two dudes that happen to be friends from a weird set of circumstances who honestly, like Jack Aubrey is basically, what's his name?
Vinny Chase?
Yeah, Vinny Chase. Because all these things happen and you think he's turning the corner. Everything great's going to happen. And then crap happens every single time. And it's just over and over again. So it's basically Entourage in the 1800s. So a lot less, not a lot less sex. There's a lot of sex in this series. Only enough people were indeed having sex in the early 1800s. Anyway, I really do enjoy it. I've read the whole series once before. So this is my second time through. I'm only on the second book. They're not fast reads by any stretch of the imagination. There is a significant amount of nautical terms. You have to hoist the mizzen mast and brace the fore. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff that you're going to read and you're going to be like, huh? And you can either be a total nerd like me and figure out what all that stuff means by looking at very detailed drawings of British nautical ships from the early 1800s.
That sounds like a rousing evening.
Or you could be sane like most people and just ignore that kind of part of it and understand that you're not going to understand what leeward and, you know, being wayward and having the weather gauge, what all that stuff means. And that's okay. You don't have to know that. I'm just a nerd and I find it very interesting. So anyway,
what is it you were telling me, in the books that the standard crewmen get is space on one of the ships? Cause that was blowing my mind.
Okay. So we were talking about this oddly enough, because we talked about our jobs and we both work at the same location and they're talking about kind of going to a more open floor plan, in our office and everyone's bitching and moaning about how little space we're going to get. And I brought up, hey, you want to talk about little space? So a basic seaman on a nautical ship in the early 1800s was allotted for his entire personage. So where he sleeps, where he keeps his stuff, his space was 14 inches by 4 feet.
That's just impossible.
Now, to be fair, one of the things I did point out that because people go, you can't sleep in 14 inches by 4 feet. And that's actually technically true. And they didn't have to sleep in 14 inches by 4 feet because that was your space, like for your trunk.
Okay. That's everything. A big difference. I mean,
well, it isn't, but it is still your space to sleep on. But here's the key. You've got 28 inches by 4 feet to sleep.
Oh, wait, because the 4 feet is the part that's throwing me off here. Yeah, unless you're just doubled over with pain from scurvy.
No, you're curled up in a hammock.
That's pretty cozy.
Stretch out. Okay, you don't stretch out in a hammock. I'm telling. Anyway, the reason the 28 inches is because there's always a crew on deck. No, they're not always asleep at the same time. Is what I'm trying to say. Okay, so that's why
I get that.
That's why they actually got 28 inches to sleep in.
It's luxury then.
It is. So they had a you know, area that
that's first class by like today's plane standards.
Yeah. Needless to say, and I think it's just as true now as it was back then. It's good to be the captain,
yeah, or
the master commander, because he got all kinds of space.
Yeah. Now the author of that, if you're looking for it, is Patrick O'Brien.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it is Patrick O'Brien.
People need to know that. And the movie came out in 2003.
Yeah.
So 12 years ago. Which, yeah, man, that doesn't feel like it was 12 years ago.
And like, if you saw the movie and you thought, boy, I didn't like that movie. It was boring. Run away now from this book series, because that was actually like 3 or 4 books worth of action mushed into one movie. So
all of the action from 3 books, and it was still a pretty slow paced movie.
But I just find it fascinating. I think it's very interesting. It is to me. I mean, it's obviously a fictional account, but Patrick O'Brien has, he did very great amount of painstaking research. So it is kind of a mirror or a looking glass into what life was like, for people in that time, and I just find it very fascinating.
Huh? You know, I
want to
go ahead.
In any second now, the mizzens will be hoisted. I'm just sure of it.
Well, you know, I had some Audible credits several years ago when I was an Audible customer, and I think I've listened to the first two books maybe, and I do recall it being really good. Now, I have not hunted down and read any of them.
The character development is just, I mean, again, when you spend that much time with basically two people, you can obviously develop a lot of character, but they're very well developed characters, and they're interesting characters, and you just keep rooting for the poor guy because you just know that he's finally going to make it.
One of these days.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, not as much as you would hope.
Well, you don't spoiler alert 19 books, and in the end, he died.
No. Well, in the end, Patrick O'Brien died, so book 19 is actually unfinished.
So he pulled a Robert Jordan, huh?
Yes, he did. So in the end, we'll never know what really happened, but it's interesting. And there are a lot of references to actual people like Lord Nelson and stuff that, you know, are not.
Ooh, fancy Lord Nelson.
Well, I hope you know who Lord Nelson is.
I know the name. I couldn't tell you a thing about the man.
Okay.
I'm an uneducated lout.
Let's wrap it up.
Wrap it up, Jeff. Take us home.
You just listen to, I think I can fairly say, I know a lot of times we say this jokingly, I think it's fair to say this episode really was not above average. So there it is. I'm going to throw it out there. I apologize, folks. I have not felt well. We've both had really stressful and hard weeks. So we're doing our best here. If you want to call in and agree with me, which I kind of feel like you would,
agree with Jeff, dial 1. Yeah.
Give us a call at 317-643-1212. Don't forget what I really want from you and what I am excited about. And maybe I can get some of that passion from earlier on in the show. I want your one song. Give me your one song. So you can do that on the phone line again, 317-643-1212. You can do that on Twitter. You can tweet at No Better Show. You can tweet at Jeff Chaney. You can tweet at Not the Real Jacob. And we'll get those. You can also go to Facebook, facebook.com/nobettershow. You can send us an email with that wonderful information, feedback@nobettershow.com. We're really looking forward to it. You know, if you send us it in an email or a phone, if you don't want us to say who gave us the one song because you don't want people to know that your one favorite song is Katy Perry, I get it.
Hey, she's catchy. You shut up about Katy Perry.
I'm just saying maybe there's someone out there that is ashamed of that. Don't be. I'm not saying you should be. But there could be someone that's ashamed of that. And if you are and you don't want us to tell people who that one song came from, that's fine. I would prefer to share that. So let us know one way or the other. So look forward to that. I'm actually pretty excited about that. If you did enjoy the show, I don't know why you would have. Please go give us a few kind words on iTunes, or maybe say, hey, listen to every show except for that number 32. That was a dirty, dirty show. Whichever. We do appreciate the fact that you guys come back and listen to us. We would love it if you could tell friends, family, relatives, people that you like, people that you don't like, strangers on the street. If you could recommend us, we would really appreciate it. We enjoy having someone to listen to us. It does make us feel better, and that's quite honestly why we do it. It certainly isn't for all the money.
Oh, all that money.
Of which there is, by the way, none, which is fine. That's okay. So, you know, until next time, thank you so much for listening. I wish it were a better show. Maybe you enjoyed one part of it. And if you did, what more can we really look for? So there you go.
Have a better week, everybody.
Yeah.
We're going to try and do the same.
My throat hurts so bad.
Go drink some tea with honey. Honey and lemon and cinnamon.
That's definitely going to happen.
No, cayenne.
So I'm sorry, folks. Thanks again. We really do appreciate it. Have a week.
Bye, everybody.
You sound all like brooding and like a six-pack-a-day smoker. You should capitalize on that. You should hire yourself out for voice work here.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, right?
Is it, allergies or are you sick?
It's allergies.
And allergies make Excuse me, allergies make you sound like that?
Drainage, yeah. Oh,
neat, I don't want to hear about drainage.
Okay, I'm recording now. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another. It's the Barry White edition of the No Better Than Average podcast. We're going to be doing the No Better Than Average podcast. This is your host, Jeff Cheney.
Hey, you need a this cooler what, name.
This is what I sound like when I don't feel very good.